'cause you're only a man, and a man's got to learn to take it. Try to believe, though the going gets rough, that you gotta hang tough to make it. History repeats itself, try and you succeed. Never doubt that you're the one, and you can have your dream.
Yeah! Woo! Your Asian neighbors are gonna think you're crazy. I'm lazy, Patrick Swayze, got a mustache, a bukkake, a bukkake. Don't block me, I will sock thee. I got a Pokemon collection like hockey. Tom Talky. Yo, it's the Cat Figure Podcast, episode 48.
Yamasaki.
What's your name?
Tom McLaughlin.
I'm Ryan DiPaolo, and that's Tom McLaughlin. So who are some baseball players who wore number 48 before we get into blazing baseball action?
Pablo Sandoval in the house.
Oh, yeah, Pablo. Is he the best active player?
He is, surprisingly enough.
Uh-huh.
Best, probably the only thing he's the best at currently, other than eating donuts.
Ooh, shots fired.
Then, historically, we have Torii Hunter and Pedro's brother, Ramon Martinez.
And then who was the Quattro guy?
Oh, Paul Quantrill.
He sounds like from the East West Bowl, the Key and Peele sketch, where it's like, did Larry is Miss Finkelstein? And then it's like Quattro Quattro is one of the names.
Paul Quantrill.
Aaron. Yeah, doesn't that sound like a ridiculous name?
Yeah, it does.
And we were also talking about the odds that you're the best player in the league with your number. There's 750 active players in baseball. So the odds that you'll be the best player, if all the numbers were evenly worn, is 1 out of 7.5, right?
Yep.
So,
hot take, you gotta Aaron Judge is the best 99.
Yeah, fine. I don't know numbers, I was going to say.
Nobody else has worn 99 in a very long time.
I know, and I also don't have another hot take about another number. I was going to give a sarcastic joke of another hot take, but I don't have it.
00.
What number is, like, Bryce Harper? Do you know numbers in general? I don't know any player's numbers. I know David Wright is number 5. That's it.
I think Bryce Harper is 34. I could be wrong, though.
He's something with the 4. I feel like he may be 14. Anyway, so this is the Cap Figure Podcast.
14.
Excuse me.
Get out of here.
Mid-24. All right, so we'll split the difference. Half one in the other, nickel in the
butt. He's 34.
All right, so this is episode 48. As we said, we named some 48s. It's a very sad day, right? Because we're going to talk about this for the first part and then talk about some free agent, like, regret already, right? Maybe some teams, if they would want to, would they undo their free agent signings already? It's very early in the season.
I hope they kept their receipt.
I hope they kept their receipt. You got 90 days to exchange Mark Melanson or Edwin, guys. But, you know, it has to be in its original packaging. All right. So here it is. Here we are. The Mets... devastating day, very grim day, sad day. Every Met fan should chop their cock off, right? Every Met fan should really be spinging in the blues, as
every
they say.
Every Met fan must endure the suffering.
I'm so mad that you say that. I'm so stupid. It's such a corny person, stupid band. You know, like, there's, like, dumb construction workers going to work, a Mets and a Yankee fan like us, and one of them's like, man, I can't believe Noah's hurt, and the other was like, must endure the suffering, hey! And he does, like, a fake jab gesture to his friend's ribs. Like, just joshing you, bro. It's like, get out of here with these stupid prepackaged crap talk.
So your two good players are both out.
Yeah, thanks. Yes. Yes, yeah.
So now the franchise is left in the hands of Jay Bruce, Curtis Granderson, and Travis d'Arnaud.
Dude, those are fine hands. Those
and
are
Michael Conforto.
They have very good hands. They clip their nails. They don't have any ingrown hair. No,
as
but
as long
all right.
as it's not a left-handed starting pitcher.
So let's tell the story, bro. Why? Because he's not here, or they don't have any? You
well,
mean?
Now all of their hitters are lefty. All their good hitters are lefty.
Oh, you mean? Now. Oh! I thought you were referencing Steven Matz being still out.
No.
Yes, that we would suffer against the lefty because Conforto, but dude is out. All right. So here's what happened. Very normal lengthy. Noah Syndergaard the other day couldn't make his start because his bicep hurt him, and he said he couldn't lift his arm above his head, which is pretty alarming, right? That's a pretty big deal, Tom.
But he said that he didn't go for an MRI because he knew that nothing was wrong.
Well, the team, yeah. Well, so what happened was that the team was like, oh, God, what the hell? Well, you better go for an MRI, and he refused it. Which Sandy Alderson now is like, asked, like, is that normal protocol? And he's like, no, it's not normal protocol, but I can't make him go get an MRI.
You can't put him in the tube.
I can't tie the guy down and put him in the tube is what he said, right? Which makes sense, I guess. It's like the only other time I've ever thought about players having their own free will, like realizing that they're not literally owned by the teams, is when Tanaka was like, no, I'm not getting surgery, mofos, right? Yep. I don't know. Do you? Because it's funny. I don't often think about players as having free will, but it is their life.
Yeah, it's weird. I don't know if there's a correlation, but I remember he had a similar problem last year.
Who, Noah?
In the beginning of the year, yeah, he had some tightness in his arm or something like that, and it kind of just kind of got, like, I guess, swept under the rug because the other pitchers were dealing with, you know, bigger injuries, but I wonder if that has any lingering effect over to this year.
Well, maybe not. But anyway, let's finish the story. So what happened was this was over the weekend. He had that. He wouldn't do an MRI. He threw a bullpen session. Then he started, and then he had his start pushed back, and then he made his start today after a couple of days off and throwing a bullpen or whatever, and then he couldn't get out of the first inning. Well, he did. I'm sorry. He, in the second inning, after giving up five runs and giving up a bunch of walks and obviously giving up five runs, he was, like, grabbing his lat, and he was in tons of pain. And it's Sunday night right now when we're recording, and tomorrow he'll have an MRI. But this is bad news, right? Because, and then I'll get your take, this is on the heels or the toes. I don't know which way feet go in these wacky world, and this Twitter fucking people, is that Yoenis, recently, you know, this is how the Mets roll. Like, the player has a minor thing, and then it turns into a major thing. And this is why the Mets get criticized for not handling injuries well. But Yoenis, about a couple weeks ago, said he felt like a shock in his hamstring or something. And then he played through it. He was fine. He didn't play through it. He missed days. He missed, like, five games.
Less. Maybe two.
You think so? I think it was more. But anyway, he missed a couple games, and then he came back, and now his hamstring is really injured. And I don't know. Do you know how long he's supposed to be out for? I don't know if there's a timetable, but because it's vague with hamstrings, but it needs to be as long as possible.
There's a couple of different levels of how bad the hamstring sprain is, but the Mets were extremely vague. Like, they were asked straight out by reporters, can you, like, tell us exactly, like, what level of a sprain or strain this is, and they just didn't. They refused to.
Well, speak closer to the mic if you can. It's funny because Stefania Bell, who I hate, you suck, Stefania, if you're listening. You talk too much. You're not there for your banter about baseball. You're there for injury reports, you bimbo. She said that a lot of times. She said once, she was like, when he said that he felt shock in his hamstring, that's super alarming, and that most doctors should have, like, been more alarmed by it than the Mets were, I guess, insinuating that the Mets, like, mishandled it or whatever. But as Sandy Alderson pointed out today when, you know, questioned again about these two injuries, basically, he was like, you know, just like regular doctors, we have to go by what the patients say, right? But if they say they're okay, we have to take them at face value to some extent, especially, like, I'm not going to take an MRI. But then again, in the NFL, you see with concussions, players aren't to be trusted. They can't analyze themselves that well. I don't know. What do you think about the Mets hit? Let's first talk about if you think the franchise or what might have gone wrong, if anything, preventable, and then we'll talk about what this means for the season, but...
Yeah, I think my initial reaction is I think there are a couple factors playing into what went wrong. I think if we were to say, let's say instead of Cespedes and Syndergaard, that it was Robert Gsellman and Asdrúbal Cabrera,
uh-huh.
I think they may have handled it differently.
Well, how?
I think that I'm not... totally
well just what in what direction
I think that they may not want to, like, piss off the player, and I think that the other factor of it is
what you mean, if it were those lower players, they would make them take the MRI, they wouldn't worry about pissing them off as much, you mean?
I think they would press the issue, like, a little bit more.
That's an interesting theory. That could very well be. They're two stars, and when they're like, no, I'm fine, you're more likely to believe them, maybe. That makes sense.
And then I think the other sort of thesis running into this is they came into the season, they've got a number of injuries already. They sort of stumbled out of the gate, and you look up, you have a series coming with the Nationals, and you're 6.5 games back. You know you need to win this series. Like, it's not a must-win, but
so you're accusing the Mets of an organizational deep conspiracy theory?
No, I'm just saying I think they were pressing.
Get out of
here
with that. No, sorry, go on.
I think there's a tendency to press.
And what? But what? But press who? The player or the whole organization to lie to themselves about injuries?
I mean, you know, let's say they were instead ahead 7 games. I think they may have let Syndergaard maybe just miss a start altogether, or they may have.
But who they wear? Like, you think everyone in the organization falls into groupthink of this pressure? Like specifically where along the line might this manifest itself? I hear ya.
I think it comes down, I mean, it always comes back to the GM and then the manager, but I think it's got to be on the GM, right?
Your theory because sucks, dude. Where in the line would this
general
pressure?
General manager.
Okay, so I think that's hogwash. Because I don't think that the general manager, I think that if your theory were to be true, it would have to be these low-level trainers where they're easily impressed and scared of Noah Syndergaard and Yoenis, who come in, and they're superstars, right? And they're probably, like, more scared when they're like, all right, Yoenis, we got to do this checkup on your hamstring, bend over. And he's like, man, I don't want to bend over, man. And then they're more likely to be like, all right, you sure you're fine? You want me to go tell them you're fine, right? Or he feels the pressure to get back. I could see how that, then he reports to Sandy Alderson or whoever, like, yeah, he's fine. I could see it in that way. But I don't think that ever somebody who could be as successful as Sandy Alderson with all the cards on the table would ever choose to press given the record right now when their whole giant contracts and futures are on the line.
I tend to disagree. I think if they were 6.5 up, I think they may have handled these injuries a little bit differently.
But how? You think he's retarded, Sandy Alderson?
Well, how
you think he's retarded?
I don't think he's retarded. I think you have Cespedes. You had him sit out 2 days, and then the first time he's running around the bases, he pulls his hamstring again. I don't think you throw him right back out there again if you're 6.5 ahead. I think because they were playing the Nationals again, I do think they felt the pressure.
But what you're saying makes sense if there is one person managing all of this, but I don't think there is. I think it's multiple levels of stuff.
There is, but it all filters back to the same place, right?
Well, who? Terry Collins? Or
if the trainer's intimidated and then the trainer then goes to tell the general manager, I mean, he is getting this information at some point, right? Like, he knows everything that's going on with the star players from somebody else. And, you know, you better believe if he tells them, look, we're going to put you on the DL, then there's nothing they can do, really. So.
You mean, oh, right. Well, it's Sandy's choice to put them on the DL or not for 10
right.
days. Right, right. I get what you're saying. And then when you look at it like that, I guess it's just as simple. It'll be like, oh, we can't afford to put him on the 10-day DL. And then, like, if he was on the 10-day DL, obviously couldn't back for 10 days. But after 2 days off, five, I think it was more games that he missed. But he says he feels better, and then he comes back. Right, right. There's no room for that if you put him on the DL. There's no room for that debate. I think that, yes, fuck yeah. I bet, just for everyone, I bet $200 on the Red Sox, Cubs, under 8.5 runs on Sunday Night Baseball right now, April 30th, and there's just a play at the plate now in the top of the seventh that scores 2-1. So, sorry, my gambling. You know, that's what they say on a tangent. To tell if you're addicted to something, if it affects you with your work and friends, here is friends. And when I'm at work, I literally, when we have to close out, I'll be putting in a bet or setting my FanDuel lineup and be like, 1 second, I'll help you at work in a second.
Are you having a revelation here?
No, I'm just excited that they got the out at the plate. I'm still in D-gen mode. All right, so anyway, so I guess, so your hot take is that Sandy Alderson is a mutt?
I think he made the wrong decision here. I think with Cespedes.
Okay, and then what about Syndergaard? How isn't that interesting? I've never, like I said, do you ever think about? I don't think about players not having the same incentive, like motivations as the team with stuff like that. Like, why would he hide? Why would he not want to take an MRI? Maybe he's claustrophobic.
That's very weird. Here's, I guess, the only thing I can see from his standpoint, but it's so far away that it seems like it wouldn't matter, is that he doesn't want to have the narrative that he's often injured because he thinks it will impact how much money he ends up making down the road. But,
well, whatever the reason, it has to be a stupid reason, right?
Yeah.
So we're gonna entertain this. I was going to say that's stupid, but no matter what it is, it's going to be stupid because why would he not get the MRI?
It could be... I mean, we're looking for a rational reason. It could be as simple as, like, he's just very egotistical and doesn't want to, like, admit that he has an injury.
Oh, right. Or he's claustrophobic. He's afraid of the MRI tube. Like,
yeah,
right? I mean,
that could be
people are really afraid of MRIs.
Or he had plans the night that they wanted him to go do the MRI. Like, you know? Like, maybe
like, man,
he had
I gotta
a date.
Go get my dick sucked.
Yeah.
You know, yeah, you're right, it could be any of those things. Or he could be afraid that, like, you know, I know with back MRI or whatever, a back x-ray, they could find anything wrong if they're looking for it, you know? And he didn't want to miss more time.
Or, you know, like...
He didn't want to be put on the DL.
People talk about this, you know, it's like, it doesn't rationally make sense, but once you hear from the doctor, let's say he has, like, a tear in his bicep, until you hear from the doctor that you have a tear in your bicep,
it's not real.
Yeah, you're like, you don't want to confront the truth.
Right. No, that totally makes sense. It's only real. Right. Like, you know what else is that? I think that maybe it could be, what, they overturned that play at the plate? He could be also just, like, not wanting, let me start over this thought. The fact that he refused an MRI is another indication that maybe the Mets aren't good at handling injuries or something. Maybe. Or maybe he's, like, afraid that they're going to overreact or mishandle it and he wants to play. Or that he just doesn't trust them, what they'll do with the information, right? But maybe that would be any player. But it's so wacky. Like, I just really never thought of players having the agency to do stupid stuff like this until Masahiro Tanaka. So, all right, now what do you think? Do you think the Mets are totally screwed now or a little screwed? Again, we don't know as we sit here what is up with Noah Syndergaard. It was just today, Sunday, April 30th, that he got hurt. What's your guess, by the way?
About the injury?
Yeah, what do you think it's going to be? Just random prediction for a minute.
I think he's going to be out for at least, I would say, 2 months.
I'm going to say he just misses his next start with a little constipation. He needs some liquids.
You know,
is that wishful thinking?
I don't think they're totally screwed, and I'll tell you why. I think, one, obviously they have had all of these injuries. They're going to get players that are better back, but I think there are parts of this club that you look to, and we talked about this last year, like the Astros with a catcher, the Rangers with a catcher. Like, if you look at the Mets, their third base production is by far the worst in baseball. If you bring up Ahmed Rosario in a month and he's even, let's say, the 25th best third baseman, I think that will help your win probability by, say, like 0.2 of a percentage.
Yeah,
point.
No, that's a really good point. It's really nice to be horrendous at one spot because
exactly.
You can upgrade so much at that spot instead of being a little crappy at a lot of spots. Then it's like these vague diminishing return upgrades is what Tom's saying. And last year that was the case with the Indians and the, who was it? The Astros at catcher or something?
The Rangers. But the Astros too. And, you know, you look at the National League, right? And in the past, you could take for granted that the Cubs, the Pirates, and the Giants, and the Dodgers were always going to be there, along with the Nationals in the Mets division. This year, the landscape's a little bit different, but I think that plays to the Mets' hand.
But the wins still go somewhere. Like, I mean, the Rockies and the Diamondbacks could just replace those teams.
Yeah, I agree that the wins can go anywhere, but I'm just saying in the past you have teams that have like an established track record for a couple of years and they start off well. There's a, I would say, a higher likelihood that those teams will continue winning. You look at the Diamondbacks and the Rockies now, and they're probably the, you know, most likely to compete with the Mets for a wild card spot, but the track record's just not there. So there's more question.
What you just said is the stupidest thing I've ever heard. You're saying in past seasons when they started out well, they happened to end up good? Well, no. I mean, we don't remember the seasons that the Dodgers started out good and then sucked.
What I'm saying is you take a team like the Giants last year. They had a track record for 4 or 5 years. They were consistently a playoff team. When they start off the year with a pretty good record, you can kind of take for granted that they're going to be in the chase, right? And so the teams that have that experience and have, you know, shown to be playoff caliber rosters in the past that you would expect to push for a playoff spot, those teams haven't started as well.
So what?
So what? I mean, that just, you know.
Other teams are, though.
Yeah, of course. But there's a higher degree of variance that they're going to do as well.
But you can't. You're just looking at the past and saying that. You know what I mean?
You're taking a sample size of what, 25 games?
Yeah, but no, but you're looking at past 25 games where the Giants, who ended up being good, were good, and then they stayed good. Like I don't understand. I don't understand your point.
So you have a team that has won 3 World Series in the past 6 years, and then you have a team like the Rockies, right? Like if one of those teams starts out 15-10, I would always take the team with a better track record in the past.
I don't think the past matters at all. I think that all it matters is the, like, maybe the preseason prediction of how well we thought they'd be, how good we thought the team would be, maybe matters, and maybe they're one and the same. But I don't think track record, just for the sake of track record, really matters.
Well,
I think
you're showing for like a couple of years that it's a team that has consistently made the playoffs, right?
Yeah.
So that takes away, like, a decent amount of the risk that they're just a 25-game hot streak, right? Because
why does that take that risk away?
It doesn't completely take it away, but it has, like, less of a variance than a new team emerging.
But then, okay, but so what you're saying, though, is that, like, no – But how do teams ever get good? Like, some team is going to get good. Like, you're describing momentum, which is not a real thing.
No, I'm not. I'm saying, of course, teams will emerge. I'm just saying, all things equal, the team with the track record has a lower risk variance of falling off.
Just simply because they have a track record?
I mean, yeah, relative to the other team.
I'm gonna
we're
take
talking
this,
in circles, but
because yeah, I'm gonna take this clip and post it on my Twitter at Horrible Stats because you're talking in Horrible Stats, bro.
Nah, I mean, you're not making any sense at all. Like,
no, you're not. All right, but you're not. You're just saying because they used to be good, they're probably gonna be good. Like,
I'm saying if you have a team that start 15-10, right, and you're trying to project which team will make the playoffs, would you feel more comfortable putting your money on a team that has won 3 of the last 6 World Series, or would you rather put your money on a team that hasn't made the playoffs in 7 years?
I'd probably, obviously, slightly, like very slightly rather the team that's done well in recent years.
So that's all I'm saying.
But no. But it very doesn't. That is no, I don't like it when they, like, I think it's silly to talk about the Mets' chances when one entire half of baseball is, like, a little bit different than the year before. It's like they still have to win the same number of games.
Well,
just because the Giants may not be good.
What,
like,
teams in the NL made the playoffs last year?
The Giants, the Dodgers, the Cubs, and the Nationals, and the Mets.
What teams made the playoffs in the NL the year before that?
I don't remember. The Pirates, did they, or no?
It's 4 or 5 out of the same teams, right?
Yeah.
So it does kind of show that, you know, if you take 1 year and there's not a ton of changes to the roster, you have, instead of a 25-game sample size, you now have a much larger sample size showing that this team is a highly competitive team. There's too many question marks with the Rockies and the Diamondbacks right now.
Okay, so you would rather, like, what? Okay, so now I guess we'll move on. But what would you rather? Would you rather be the Rockies at 16-10 right now, or the Giants at, say even just 10-16? They're really like 7-13 or something. But, like, I mean, you would rather, or even the Dodgers at six games back, or what is that? No, that's only three games back. I'll say four games back. Like, you would rather be the Dodgers four games back than the Rockies right now?
No, I would take the team with the four-game lead, of course, but I'm saying, like...
And you don't think they're going to be as good as the Dodgers would be if they were in the same spot? You're saying that if the flip-flopped and we woke up today and the Dodgers had the Rockies record, that it's more likely that the Dodgers are going to have a good season?
Yeah, because...
That's stupid.
Because you've seen the track record that they're one of the best teams in baseball, so...
The Rockies have an all-time great franchise. The Rockies have a track record. Okay. All right, so let's move on. So, all right, free agent contracts. Are there any you would refund? You know, keep your receipts, we always say. That's the saying here at the Cap Figure Podcast. Edwin Encarnacion is why we brought this up, because he's sucking so far this year, huh? He's batting 200. But I mean, he's still hitting his average. Exit velocity is still above the league average, like 4 miles an hour. But his BABIP is the same as it was in years past. He might really be stinky. Would they refund that, you think, right now?
I don't think they would refund that.
Why? Because you think he's going to turn around?
I think he'll turn around.
And we like the price they got him at, remember.
Yeah, I mean, it was a pretty good value for that. You know, I just think he's just too good of a hitter. I think that, yes, they, you know, like, that's a kind of a big deal for that franchise.
Yeah,
but,
I want to know how they're drawing.
I think that if I were personally to project forward, there wouldn't be another DH that I would rather have instead of him out of anybody in the free agent class.
Yeah. What do you think is going on? I mean, he's grounding out a lot more. It's sort of scary that his BABIP is the same as it's been. Like, even though his exit velocity is bad, like, he may be really about to decline. But to be fair, he's always very streaky. Like, he's a home run hitter, you know, player, and he's been streaky in his career. I mean, what is his ground? I think he's grounding out, like, 40.4 more. Like, last year, his ground out to air out was, like, 0.9, and now he's at, like, 1.4, which is the highest. If he stayed at this rate, it would be the highest in his career ever. Like, he's grounding out a lot more.
I mean,
hitting into double plays.
I'm not concerned. The only thing that I think could be playing a part, and I just don't put any, like, I don't buy it, would be that he flew under the radar.
Depressed because he lives in Cleveland?
Yeah, he flew under the radar in Toronto. He was the third, you know, like, the third guy in the lineup, and now he makes big money, and there's a huge expectation in Cleveland. But I just think he maybe just got off to a slow start.
I think he's just realized he moved to friggin' Cleveland, and he's like, oh my God.
That is depressing.
This is so depressing. Or like when Marshawn Lynch got off the airport in Buffalo, and he was like, I thought I was going to be in New York City.
How much
more would I have to get paid to live in Cleveland?
Yeah. per year.
How about you? Like percentage wise.
Well, it all comes like relative to the amount of money I'm making. But like, let's say I was Bryce Harper coming up in free agency.
Okay,
right?
And say $400 million is to be expected.
I would probably, let's say he's going to make $40 million a year. I'd probably need, if I were to make $40 million a year from the Yankees, I would probably need $55 million a year for the Indians.
I know.
And I'm not even exaggerating.
I know, me neither, it's hard because we're New Yorkers. Let's say Colorado, like, pick another non-crappy city, because New York is a tough comparison. Let's say even San Diego or Colorado versus Cleveland.
I would enjoy living in Colorado.
Me too. I would love Denver or San Diego. Like, I wouldn't mind, or Seattle. Like, there's many places I would take $40 million. I agree with you. It would have to be, like, way more than they would give me.
I would need $10 million more a year
to live in
Cleveland than...
No joke.
The only other place, Cincinnati, would be off the board for me.
You don't like Cincinnati? I love you. I want that demographic listening to the show.
Why would I want to go to Ohio?
Dude, we can't totally cut out the Ohio market of our listeners already, Tom.
My girlfriend went to college in Ohio, so...
It's too late to save face. I like you guys in Cincinnati. See, Tom hates all of Ohio. I still want to hold on half of it. But I know. Where else would be the worst to play? Probably Atlanta I wouldn't want to play in. I don't like that area. Or Tampa. I would kill myself. I would rather...
Tampa's
I might
place.
Rather play in Cleveland than Tampa. I hate Florida. I hate it. But, yeah, Denver would be sick to play him. But anyway, to answer your question, I would need more than any other team, probably that much more. Dude, I would go to Toronto on a pay cut versus, you know what I mean? Actually, I would take $38 million in Toronto.
Milwaukee's pretty low on that. I think the central theme here is the Midwest. No,
yeah,
bueno.
You hate them. Stop. You should stop naming bad cities. No bueno. They're not going to like us. So do you think you
they have the internet there?
You brought up a good point. Oh, shots fired. You brought up a good point about Mark Melanson refund. Why might they want to do that, Tom, the Giants, on the big contract they gave a closer after sucking in the bullpen last year?
Well, usually you give a closer big money if
you're
one piece away.
Yeah, when you're about to be good.
Or if you're the Yankees and just have a ton of money to spend. So, look, the Giants, rough start to the year. Their record is terrible, but when you look at the advanced statistics, they're even worse. They don't have their ace.
What advanced statistics?
Their weighted runs created plus is 74, which is second worst in the league.
Besides the Royals, who I bet the under wins on the season, and Tom said I was stupid. Woohoo! Go on.
So, yeah, I guess the point is that...
Do you think they would take a refund?
I think the Giants, if you're going to... Which I believe, I think they're going to end up being sellers at the deadline. I think they would take a refund.
They would not do it, even just after this few games, being this bad because of Mad Bum? What if Mad Bum wasn't hurt, but they were just still this bad? You think they would do it? I think if Mad Bum wasn't hurt, they wouldn't return him.
Then I don't think they would return him.
See, I think that the Indians might refund Edwin. I think it depends. I know I moved on, and then now I'm going back. But I would want to see how well Cleveland's drawing or not, and their offense is playing decently well. I'm curious to know, and this is what people said in the offseason, that like this will be the test of the Cleveland market or whatever, how well they can show up for a team. They spend this money on Edwin after making the World Series. If I'm not drawing or I'm drawing the same as early last season or even just a little bit better, I would sell Edwin. That combined with his not playing that well so far.
Yeah, they talk about the World Series, like the carryover of making the playoffs or the World Series, how that improves your season ticket holder base and your attendance and just the overall popularity of the team. And I guess... That makes sense, right? Because they already kind of maxed out. I would think that they got a lot of fans just from that playoff run. So I don't know if they're adding that. Like, I don't know if the return on investment for Encarnacion, you can really, like, justify that.
We'll see. It'll be a test of Cleveland. You're right. I mean, if they were in somewhere like New York where there are enough fans to give both boosts. I know what you're saying. There's not enough potential fans to give a World Series boost and an Edwin boost, right?
Yeah.
But I don't know. I think that there may be. Or also they probably just want to be good again. Who knows? That's a good point, though. So I would probably say they would refund. They both might refund, man. I mean, it's so crazy to say that so early in the season, but you know, you have to make decisions that fast in baseball. And that's what's so interesting for managers this time of year and stuff. It's like, you got to stop saying small sample size pretty soon for these everyday players who are sucking, like Curtis Granderson or Greg Bird, right? Or Byron Buxton or Jose Reyes, who suck. They're sucking. And it's not a small sample size anymore. So speaking of Greg Bird, are you worried about Greg Bird? Do you think he might not be that good?
Yeah, of course I'm worried. I mean, came up, was a great hitter. He's been a great hitter.
2 years ago, he was good, yeah.
All throughout the system. I still think that he, out of that group, let's say Sanchez, Judge, who's the other guy? Tyler Austin, Ref Snyder. I think he was the most polished hitter, like all-around hitter.
Yeah,
because
we saw
him
do well in the majors, right? He had hit like 11 home runs. He was only up. Well, let me look at his stats. In 2015, in 46 games, he had an OPS of 871. Man, he had 11 homers. You know, he was doing well. He was walking. He got on base 343, and then now this year he's batting in 56 at bats. So how many games is that? Not that many, but in 18 games, he's batting 107, and he's an OPS of 479. That's so bad. He has six hits.
Yeah, and look,
I'm cutting him. I have him in fantasy, and he's barely, his exit velocity is a little, like, barely average in baseball. He sucks.
And then you have the year in between. I mean, you can't dismiss that. Yeah, but I mean, that prolongs the period between when he actually last produced at a high level, right? So psychologically, if he had this like little hot streak at the end of last year and then struggled coming into this year, I think it's a little bit different story than now. Like, that hot streak was, what, 18 months ago?
Yeah.
Like, it increases the risk of him, I think, turning it. I think it.
Why? Why psychologically? What does that do for you?
I just think, you know, he's coming off this, like.
But he was out. It's like the last time we saw him on a baseball field, he was good.
Right. I just think it becomes that much harder for him mentally to, like, get over this injury, right? Because he can be thinking, like, while I was injured, did I lose something?
Yeah.
Did I physically lose something?
That could be. And in the meantime, it's like you can't keep putting him out there, especially if you're the Yankees and you're starting out well. You know, it's not like the better the Yankees play, the more it's like we don't have patience for this crap. This is not a let's just see what we got type of year, right?
Yeah.
Aaron Judge, who you admitted you were wrong on because you didn't think he'd be that good, seems to be good, but do you think that are you afraid you may be right? Maybe he'll fall off. Maybe they'll figure him out. Maybe he'll break his knees like Yoenis because he's too jacked.
I've sort of, my concern, as I mentioned to you in the past, was he could not lay off breaking balls. And because his strike zone is so big, he would always be flailing at these sliders outside. He also could not get to fastballs like high and inside. So it's sort of, in my opinion, this is what happened last year. It's sort of like pigeonholed him into like, he has to have this pitch in this location,
right,
and he'll hit a home run.
And that feels like where Giancarlo's at.
But I've been very impressed. Like, he has laid off all of the low and away sliders. I think he has. I really think he's overcome that whole aspect, and I think he looks very locked in and in control at the plate. But I still say, like, injury risk wise, I say he has a higher than average risk of injury, given the size.
Well, and that's what they were talking about with Yoenis. Why? Just because you're carrying more weight around on your knees, or what?
I guess so.
I still don't get the size injury correlate, or speed, how they say the speed to I don't know. I don't
get
it.
You know, it's more weight on your knees. It's more weight on your feet, and
but your knee grows. Get it? Knee grows? You should be stronger if you're a Negro. Hey, here, listen to Byron Buxton. He sucks. I'm kind of enjoying this now, how much he sucks, even though I think I still have him on the team in our league.
I think you dropped him.
Oh, good. Finally, I did. Yeah. Oh, you're right. I did. Did somebody pick him up?
I looked at him for a second, and I was like,
dude, as soon as you look at his numbers more than for 1 second, you realize he's doo-doo butt. So he's hitting 147, which is better than Greg Bird, actually. He's an OPS of 433. You know, I don't know.
He strikes out 70% of the time.
Nah, but he could be good, man. In in 68 at-bats, he has 29 strikeouts, 9 walks, and 10 hits. And he's hitting fly balls. His ground out to air out is 0.71. That's like a good power hitter number, like, ratio. He should be hitting ground balls if he's so fast.
Now, let me ask you a serious question.
No, okay.
I've been trying to put my finger on it, but I can't. What cartoon character does Chris Carter look like?
I don't know. Why, do you know?
I don't know. He just, every time I look at him, I just start laughing because I there's got to be some cartoon character that he reminds me of.
All right, yo, tweet at us, at Cap Figure. Who does Chris Carter look like? What cartoon figure?
Snoopy.
He looks like, no, I know what you're saying. He looks like Fat Albert. No, I'm joking. That's racist. I don't know. I don't know many power-hitting first baseman cartoons. So I don't know. So that's it, yo. Is there anything else? You know, you just brought up your breaking ball thing, and tell the listeners your theory about Eric Thames going away and getting good on breaking balls. I don't think we mentioned that in our last episode.
Yeah, so he went and played in Korea, and in the non-high competitive levels of baseball, like let's say AAA in the U.S. or the major leagues in the U.S., velocity is just not there. So, like, he goes to Korea, and there are maybe two pitchers who can throw 95 miles an hour.
Mm-hmm.
So all of those pitchers have had to learn, based off deception and breaking balls, how to get batters out. And so he's going from the major leagues where he's facing the velocity, but then he's failing against the breaking ball.
Because before he left to Korea, he always could hit fastballs.
He could always hit fastballs, but the breaking balls were what exposed
which is
him.
A lot of the issue with a lot of young guys.
So he goes to Korea, and a lot of those pitchers there have great breaking balls, just not the velocity.
That's
so
racist.
He's getting basically 3 full years of working
practice
on
his weakness.
Exactly what his weakness is.
And that was cool just to think about, and that maybe Buxton needs to go to Korea. Maybe we need to exile Byron Buxton.
And he talked about this sort of indirectly, where, you know, they were talking about the whole steroid thing, and he said, you know, I'm not here to break any records. I just want to see if I can apply what I learned from Korea back to the MLB.
What does he mean he's not here to break records? I'd be like, man, like Carlos Gomez, I'm here to break the record, man. Look, I'm the best, man.
You don't wear a chain like that if you're not here to break records.
Right, I know. He's here to break records, and he's going to break records. All right, Mr. McLaughlin, that will do it all for the Bat Cat Figure Podcast. Do you have anything else to add to this show?
Leave us a review on iTunes.
If you could be so kind, Mr. Listener, if you could leave us a review.
And also now, if you go on our website, can you just click on the ads as much as you want?
Yeah. Yes, Mr. Listener, feel free to click on the advertisement on the homepage there, which we're working towards making our first penny. So if you could be so kind. And thank you for listening. And that'll do it. But goodbye.
That's all, folks.
Who does he look like, Dames?